This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to the pod blasting of the century. We are pod blasting left and right. We're pod blasting so often that, you know, there's nowhere that's safe. It's all part of covering the Place to Be Nation top 100 WWE wrestlers of all time project. We're discussing various wrestlers. We're coming together on podcasts, on pod blasts, on written pieces. And tonight, The Shield reunites to talk about one of the most legendary guys. He's a WWE Hall of Famer. He's quite frankly exactly what he says he is, and that's perfect. We're talking about Mr. Perfect tonight. I'm Ben Morse. With me is Greg Phillips.
Absolutely happy to be here. And remember, I'm invulnerable when I'm pod blasting.
Very nice. I got that one. You picked the right audience, Greg. And joining us too, we have the Godfather of Place to Be Nation, JT Rosero. JT, welcome.
I'd argue he picked the wrong audience because I don't know what the fuck he's talking about. But hey, guys, good to be here. I got my flak jacket on. I'm ready to go.
Yeah, you'll keep that flak jacket for years after we disband.
For sure.
But yeah, let's dive in. Let's talk about Mr. Perfect, Kurt Hennig. Like I said, a WWE Hall of Famer, a guy who came into the WWF, I believe late 87, early 88. Around then, had a great early run, was unbeaten for years, probably most closely associated with the Intercontinental Championship. That's for me, at least when I was a kid, he was the quintessential Intercontinental Champion. Had great matches with Brutus Beefcake, with Bret Hart, with all sorts of guys. And we're going to talk about it all tonight. And let's get down to it. So, JT, why don't you start us off talking about, in the NJPW ranking system, how Mr. Perfect does in terms of nuance, and that includes longevity, intangibles, the ability to show different characters. Where do you rank Mr. Perfect?
So, you know, at first glance to me, Mr. Perfect is a guy that you would think will finish very highly. Like, he's a WWE name. He's a WWE legend. Like you said, he's easily associated with WWE. And you just think of him as being perfect. And I think in nuance, he's up there. He has a very long run, 88 till, 93, and then another blip in 96 and 02. Mm-hmm. But he's pretty much consistent from 88 through 93, even though he's not in the ring for part of it. He's there. Flexible. He could work as a heel, or he could work as a face. And he worked as a very unique face, because in the prototype to a Steve Austin type of character, when he turned face, he didn't really change who he was. He was still a cocky prick that would try and embarrass people, that would be a douchebag to people. Like, it didn't change a thing about who he was. He wasn't suddenly glad-handing fans or being super nice to other faces. He was just kind of himself, just feuding with bad guys. And I always liked guys like that, and I think that's a big part of his flexibility, that he could work as a heel or face believably while staying committed to his character. Intangibles, too, obviously, depends on how you feel about his selling. I think it's really fun. I always enjoy his selling. I know others think it can be pinball-y and not as fun, but he also had a very great charisma. You believed what he was, what he said he was, and that was perfect. And whether that was through the vignettes that they did or just through his, you know, promos or whatever else, you always felt like he really was a crisp, excellent technician that was perfect in the ring and in all other sports.
Yeah, I think you make a great point there, JR, especially with the face to heel transitions and how brilliantly he did the subtle things. Because when you think about it, like you said, he did not change his character in order to be a babyface. And what that meant was all of his babyface characteristics came from what he did in the ring, which is pretty incredible that, you know, just in the way he moved or the way he looked at a guy or the way he threw a punch or whipped a guy to the ropes, he was able to convey so much to say, oh no, you're supposed to be cheering for him now, as opposed to you're supposed to be booing for him. Where do you fall on nuance for Mr. Perfect, Greg?
I mean, JR said it perfect. His versatility in playing a babyface, playing a heel, is there. We didn't get to see him work in tag teams a lot in his WWF run, but I can't hold that against him. He was a star as a solo act from the moment he arrived and never stopped being a star. Intangibles is interesting because it depends on how you define the category. I think of it as, what's his look? He has an iconic look. Everybody knows, when you say Mr. Perfect, everybody knows what he looks like. The singlet, the towel, the hair, everything was unique about him.
The gum swat? I mean, that was big. SWAT, the guy fucking made SWAT and gum over, you know? Like, that was a thing.
What kid didn't try to mimic that, you know? Like, everybody did. And, you know, the towel gimmick, all of that stuff, whether it was with Heenan, whether it was with the coach, whether it was with Ric Flair when he was the manager. Mm-hmm. He had a great camaraderie with these guys. And then you talked about the selling. To me, his selling – I'm big on body movement in wrestling. When looking at individual wrestlers, Ben touched on it a little bit as well. With the way that he moved his body as a heel was different than how he moved his body as a face, mm-hmm. like in the ring. It was subtle differences. His over-the-top selling, which I loved as a heel, that's why he was one of my favorite wrestlers when I was 6 years old. I loved watching him sell for Hulk Hogan, just bounce around the ring. It drew my eyes to the screen. When he turned into a face, he toned that down a little bit and made it a little bit more realistic, still did the over-the-top stuff, but he made it much more realistic and grounded in a way that someone like a Dolph Ziggler, to me, wasn't able to adjust his selling as well when he made that transition. So with Perfect, it was just a perfect transition.
And Perfect, too, he, as a face, always felt like someone teetering on the edge of going heel again. Like, you could feel it coming at any time, you know, right down to his first match with Savage in the tag match they were against Flair and Ramon, and then on and on. He always feels like he's about to snap, especially when you get a face-face match like Bret at King of the Ring. He's always the one that feels like he's on the edge of just, like, going nuts again and being an asshole. And then he does it in 96 when he turns on Mark Mero. He finally snaps. But the we didn't get a lot of tag work from him, but the stuff he did do here and there was still pretty good. Like that match at Survivor Series 92, a couple of things he did with the Genius. There was one in Saturday's main event that was pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
So he's had some good tag work, Survivor Series matches. So, yeah, he was never prominently featured in a tag team, but the chances he did get, the matches were good.
Yeah, no, and I'd also back up Greg's point that, well, he wasn't in a tag team per se with a Bobby Heenan or a Ric Flair. He was in duos, and he was very good at finding his role in the duo, whether he was the star working off Bobby Heenan as his manager or whether he was managing Ric Flair. Great job. I also don't want to skate past the vignettes because the vignettes are legendary. Ugh. And you gotta give him credit for making those vignettes work by totally buying into his character 100%. He was so dialed in on those. And he just, whether it was him, you know, playing pool or shooting a basket or any of the crazy stuff, the stuff with Wade Boggs was great. Mm-hmm. He really did a great job in those vignettes, which we'll cover more when we talk about his promo work. But I think it speaks to his nuance as well, because I do think those are intangibles.
I can tell you, as a six-year-old, I tried to recreate the throwing the football to himself down the field so many times when I was a kid. Because of Mr.
Perfect. Yeah, how'd it go?
Actually, I did it every time.
Yeah.
As far as anyone else knows.
Yeah.
Always working.
All right, let's move on to the jump up. Let's talk about some of his classic matches. Greg, why don't you lead us on this one? Where does Mr. Perfect peak?
To me, the answer for this one is pretty easy after recently rewatching it. His two matches with Bret Hart are his peaks, the pay-per-view matches. I'm talking SummerSlam 91, which is actually my favorite of the two Bret IC title matches at SummerSlam. But the match that I like even more than that, the King of the Ring babyface match with Perfect versus Bret, is to me 5 stars. It's a perfect match. It's one of the best matches of its era, one of my favorite matches of all time. I think it is a masterpiece in the way that Perfect, as a babyface, goes into that match, and even in the promo beforehand, you can see that heel edge starting to creep in, and he ends up – you can see him transition into that classic Mr. Perfect, the guy that felt wronged by Bret Hart 2 years earlier, and he's taking out all the last 2 years of frustration on Bret, trying to get his revenge, trying to get the one-up. I think it's awesome, man. The suplex out of the ring was insane for that time. I had never seen anything like it when I was a kid, where they both tumble over the top rope in the suplex position. Crazy stuff. Vicious offense, great selling from both guys. one of those out of nowhere surprise finishes that could have gone either way, and then perfect with the begrudging handshake at the end of the match. I think those two matches to me stand out as masterpieces. And if I'm on a desert island and I can have one series of matches from that era to watch, it's going to be Brett and Perfect, because I never saw them have anything less than a 4-star match with each other WWF.
They had great house show matches as well.
89.
I remember watching on 24/7 when they would put house shows up. It seemed like Brett and Perfect got matched up a lot, and they always had great matches. They had some, I think they had some time limit draws, but they also had some ones where Perfect cheated to win.
Yep.
Great stuff. And let's not overlook the fact that SummerSlam 91 match, even though you heaped all the praise on the King of the Ring match, and rightfully so, Greg, Perfect worked hurt like crazy in that 91 match. His back was a mess, but he gutted it out to put Bret Hart over incredibly strong and arguably made Bret Hart as a singles star that night.
I agree with that 100%. Even as I'm the biggest Bret Hart fan probably at Place to Be Nation, but Bret's not a single star without that match. It was a star-making performance, and Perfect, if you look at the way he bumps for Bret's offense, I don't think anybody in Bret's career to that point ever did that. Ted DiBiase did it on occasion, but not to the same degree. Mm-hmm. And Perfect was like that with everybody he wrestled. I remember when I was a kid, I was a huge Hulkamaniac, Ultimate Warrior fan, etc. But I liked them more when they wrestled Perfect, because I just loved the energy that he brought to the matches. Seeing him, he could make a Hulk Hogan lockup look like the most devastating thing in the world. A shove looked like it was, you know, and Shawn Michaels clearly took a lot from that. But then you look at his match with Tito Santana in the finals of the IC tournament after WrestleMania 6.
Saturday's main event rematch is even better. It might be the best match in 1990 for WWF.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, absolutely.
But, so I guess this is where I struggle a little bit with him. Because outside of the two Bret matches, which are marquee, but King of the Ring, while the match is awesome, and I agree, 5 stars, it wasn't a marquee match on the card, right? Like, going in, it wasn't even a match that was on the card. So I guess my issue with Perfect is, any time he is given that marquee spot, what else does he have on his resume besides stuff that checks in as, like, quite good? Like, you have Big Boss in WrestleMania 7. Yeah, quite good.
Sure.
Blue Blazer. Quite good. Brutus Beefcake. You know, probably a miracle since it's Brutus Beefcake, but quite good. What else does he have that, and, you know, a lot of guys don't even have the two matches he has with Bret, but I guess what I look at is, he was given a decent amount of big slot matches to step up, and you can say partially was the opponents he was given, like a Kerry Von Erich, you know, 5 minutes with Kerry Von Erich, what are you really going to do? But one I really point to is Shawn Michaels at SummerSlam 93, a match hyped as... that was supposed to be the greatest intercontinental title match of all time. That was a stupid way to build it, but it was the way they went. It was stupid that they did a count-out finish, but it's the way they went. That doesn't preclude them from going out there and tearing the house down for 10 minutes before the count-out, and they don't. To me, that's a big mark, and almost, you know, I don't say cancels out, but it comes right after that King of the Ring match. And then you look a month early, or a pay-per-view earlier, and he has a big match with Lex Luger that's coming off a pretty lengthy feud that had started since Luger's debut in January, and that's kind of just blah. And that's WrestleMania with him and, you know, debuting Luger. So it's, you know, I'm looking for that other match to prop up besides saying, all right, he had really great chemistry with Bret Hart, right? So, I mean, if you put that aside, who else did he have that chemistry with that produced great matches? I guess Tito Santana. But
Tito
again,
Santana.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so I'll give him that too. And I'm not sure I discredit. I love Perfect, but I'm trying to look at what that other... Where's that other match that came out of nowhere that is like, wow, that was a really great match?
I got one for you. And I'm not sure if you classify it as a great match. I love it. I've loved it since I first saw it on Coliseum Video when I was a kid. Brett, it is a Mr. Perfect and Shawn Michaels match, but it's not from 93. It's from 91.
Yeah, no, it is really good.
Rocker Shawn Michaels. I'm a big, big fan of that match. I actually occasionally watch that on YouTube every couple years or so just to remind myself of that one. And let me ask you this, just as a counterpoint to the SummerSlam 93 point, I made this observation in one of our live chat threads recently that 93 Shawn was the worst Shawn to me. Like, he wasn't doing great work that summer, and I think Perfect was doing great work that summer after kind of a bit of a shaky – you know, spring with the Luger feud and all that. But I think Perfect was doing good work. I think it was just bad timing for those two to come together, even though it seemed like it on paper would be great. I understand your point, but I feel like when Perfect got time with the right opponents other than that Shawn match, he put on good matches. WrestleMania 7 could have been great, and I thought it was, you know, not the best booked match in the world. I think he and Boss Man had a better match in them, and that's also to your point. But what about the Flair match on Raw? Are we gonna count that as well?
Yeah, no, that's a great one. And also his he has a really good match with a Doink too in the summer for the King of the Ring qualifiers.
That's the one I was thinking of. Yeah,
yeah, that was good too. So no, he definitely has a lot of good ones. I mean, he's again, I think this is what when I'm nitpicking, I'm looking at him as like a top 30 versus like whatever the next tier down. I'm not like this stuff's not keeping him off my list. I mean, he's in my list. It's just a matter of is he in that heady territory of top 30? When you think of his name, I think you think of him there. At least I do. I'm trying to think: is there anything that's going to bump him down and keep him out of that realm?
I think you're right, JR. I think the problem is resume. You know, he's got the two Brett matches. He's got a lot of good matches in his back pocket, but with the skill this guy displayed in those matches with Brett and in those flashes of greatness, he should be having multiple five-star matches. And he doesn't, quite frankly.
It's a baseball analogy, but Robinson Cano, a guy that had like the most gorgeous swing since Ken Griffey Jr., effortless in the field, can hit home runs, doubles, whatever he wants. And I remember this story always stuck with me. Alex Rodriguez said to him, this is probably like whatever, when he was with the Yankees 7 years ago, with your talent level, there's no excuse. Basically, you should be embarrassed that you don't have multiple MVPs by now. And I think of that like Mr. Perfect, right? Like, you know, flawless in the ring, smooth, great character, great push. It's kind of, you know, why don't you have more five-star matches by now? You know what I mean? I know it's WWF early 90s, late 80s, but there's enough guys peppered in there that he could have been having more consistently great matches. And I do wonder how you count that against him, right?
Yeah, I think for me, I just question how much of an opportunity he really had. Because if you look at the times that he was given with a lot of these guys and some of the I guess the one that comes to mind is he had a feud with Davey Boy that should have been better than it was in their encounters. But I think in general, he didn't necessarily – like he and Boss Man should have gotten 15 to 20 with a clean finish. And I think we might be talking about that match in different terms. But when I look at his individual performance, it's not like I can watch these matches and say, man, if Perfect would have done this match would have been better. You know, it's usually something that's out of his hands. But it's a fair point when you're looking at pure resume.
Let's move on to promos, because this is an area where I think Perfect excelled. Mm-hmm. I think he was a dynamic promo. He had emotion. He had cockiness when he had to be, but he could also show anger. He really showed the full range of motions. And I love his babyface promos because, like you said, JR, they feel like his heel promos was just a little squished to the side. What do you got to say on his promo work?
Yeah, great. And he's a guy that had one of the all-time great managers talking for him, and they felt like equals. Like, it never felt like Bobby was talking for him. It felt like you said, they were a duo, a pair. He was paired with one of the greatest talking wrestlers of all time, Ric Flair. And again, they'd split the promo time, and Perfect carried a lot of that load. And again, we don't really count that as much in this project, but just to show his speaking skills as an example of what they thought of him, that they paired him with those two guys, and he still got a decent portion of the workload when it came to cutting promos. And he has some really memorable ones. The one after WrestleMania 8, that match. The one at Survivor Series 92 with the turkeys. Like, that's a great one. When he turns on Bobby Heenan and dumps the water on him. Great promo.
Oh, so
wet
good.
Weasel. King of the Ring 93, Your Father, My Father. Great promo.
Yeah.
So, I mean, these are ones I'm just rattling off, like, without even really thinking about it. Some of the great promos he had. He had some really good ones with Boss Man, too, before WrestleMania 7.
He was a great promo when he came back in 2002.
Yes.
He could still talk. He had that great that really brief mini feud with Austin, where he had the backstage confrontation with Deborah. And he said, oh, I'm a friend of your husband's. Really? No, not really. It was just so, like, the way he delivered it was so brilliant.
And swatting the gum in the Rumble in 2002 while getting pushed out of the ropes. And he gets one of the biggest pops of that night and looked – I mean, they put him right – that speaks to his intangibles as well. They put him right in the final four with Kurt Angle, Steve Austin, Triple H, you know, and Mr. Perfect in this 2002.
And he didn't look out of place.
No, not at all. And that's a run, too, that you wonder what could have been if they would have given him more. You know, they end up putting him in the team with Boss Man, which I always belovingly call Team 91, that mm-hmm. they put them together, and they don't really end up doing much, and then Perfect leaves. But, that run, too, I think that actually helps him more than hurts him, that run, that he came back and looked so good and could have easily slid right into the main event.
I think if he had his shit together, we'd be talking about him in the same way we talk about Goldust these days,
right.
Where Goldust had that late career revelation and just, you know, turned things back on, late career renaissance, rather, and turned things back on and, you know, had a whole second act. I think Perfect could have had that if not for those personal problems.
Even his little promo at WrestleMania 10 backstage when was like, that's my story and I'm sticking to it. Mm-hmm. You know, that was good stuff. But, I mean, ultimately, the best thing you can say about his promo work is he managed to stand on screen next to Bobby Heenan and Ric Flair, and they didn't dominate.
Right.
Yep.
Who else can say that? Not many people.
And the great promo with SummerSlam 90 with the tornado. You know, it may tip over a few mobile homes. You know, like that. I mean, they're all very memorable promo work for him.
Yeah, absolutely. An all-time great promo. So,
and even the Genius. Throw him in, too, because he's a great talker, too. And he hung in with the Genius as well. I mean, he was always paired with really good talkers.
Yeah. Let's move to work rate. And, Greg, let's have you start us out on this one. In terms of work rate, I mean, again, the guy, it's crazy that we're not able to find more great matches because he really does seem to have all the tools. But why does he excel at work rate?
Well, the reason that it becomes apparent if you watch his matches. Every match that he's in, he's the hardest worker in the match. And I would include, or at least equally the hardest worker in the match alongside guys like Brett and Tito. But when you watch his work, there aren't holes in it. You know, he sells like no tomorrow. It may not be everybody's bag, but for me, that's what I look for in pro wrestling. I want to be entertained. And Perfect can make Lugs look entertaining. To me, other than Macho, nobody made Warrior look as good as Perfect made him look. Mm-hmm. Because Warrior made...
And Rude.
Rude as well, yeah, good point. But when Warrior hit Perfect, it looked like he had been, you know, shot with a cannon. You know, it was it was incredible to watch this guy move around the ring and put on so much effort. His chops were great. He probably had better chops than Flair at that point, mm-hmm. or on par with Flair. Obviously the Perfect Plex was a tremendous finisher that was over. And the guy just, when he went out there, it was poetry in motion. And not referring to Jeff Hardy, but referring to just something that when you watched it, it's like, my God, this is art. Even as a little kid, I remember thinking of certain wrestlers as artists, and he was one of them. He was one of those guys that I was like, how does he do what he does and make it look so easy? I think he's one of the most gifted, and we talked about that a little bit earlier, one of the most gifted workers of all time. He could do anything in the ring. Injuries cut him short. Booking cut him short a little bit. Some missed opportunities here and there. But when you just look at the work rate – the guy was almost peerless at the time.
And one of the places that work rate really stands out to me is when you can see a guy really demonstrate is in his squash matches. And Perfect was great at squash matches. He would make them entertaining. He would not need to let the opponent, the jobber, get a single offensive move in, but it would still somehow make him look credible and good, and did a really good job on that. What's your take on this, JR?
One thing I really like from him was his aggressive offense. Like, he brought a lot of anger to what he was doing and, like, importance. So, like, he never really kind of loafed. So, for a guy that's, like, an arrogant, cocky heel, he doesn't loaf. You know, like, he's constantly moving and coming at you and punching you in the face and smacking you around and hitting you hard. And he even did almost more so when he was a face, like, in that 93 run. He's angry a lot of those matches on Raw.
Mm-hmm.
Always looking to put you away where he can. He was presented as a very smart, flawless technician, and he wrestled like one. You know, his selling too at times could be pinball-y, but whatever. When he wasn't doing that, if it wasn't your bag, he also has a lot of really good other selling too. Like putting over moves like the sharpshooter, where he would sell it like death, and you could argue it SummerSlam 91, he really was. But even like the Texas Tornado Discus Punch at SummerSlam 90 immediately establishes that as a finisher.
Oh my God,
when he takes that with that 360 bump he takes and he falls down. Another one of my favorite bumps he takes WrestleMania 7 when Andre the Giant punches him and like, or whatever, and he goes flying through the ropes. Another great one. So yeah, now he's great in the ring. I don't think there's any question about that. I don't think anyone could question it. And you don't you know, we're not looking outside the auspices of WWE for this project, but that's established in his AWA work before he even gets there. But he's a guy, too. Goes out there, WrestleMania 5, boom, has a great match with Blue Blazer. Pulls a decent match out of the half-baked Terry Taylor at SummerSlam 89. the star at Survivor Series 89 in that match as well. So, again, these aren't five-star affairs, but they're the matches, like, to Greg's point, where he shines. And sure. A lot of that's due to his work rate.
And he played his character in the match. He's supposed
Non-stop.
To be the perfect athlete.
Yeah. Nonstop.
And he is so arrogant and so cocky no matter the situation. He wasn't going out there and working like a generic WWE heel. He wasn't going out there and doing constant chin locks and chokes and all that stuff. He was working a technical style, and he would cheat if he had to, but he would work this technical style and try to beat you straight up and try to slap you and taunt you along the way about it. So just a great character guy
in
the ring.
And he had a memorable moveset too, like the neck snap. Everyone knows the neck snap, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everyone
standing
knows the standing drop kick. Everyone knows the perfect plex. I mean, these are all moves that were in his repertoire that were unique to him. I mean, I feel like no one ever did the neck snap ever again. And then when he'd break out the reverse one, he did it to Boss Man. It was nasty when he does the other way. So, you know, stuff like that too stands out and helps with guys to talk about how memorable they were when you know their moveset down like that.
Also, we talk about his character, and he was not given necessarily the simplest character or gimmick to play. I mean, he was told to go out there and be perfect, to be exemplary in everything he did. That takes a certain amount of skill, and they wouldn't trust that to anyone. I remember there always being rumors that Terry Taylor almost got the Mr. Perfect gimmick, and I can't even imagine what that looks like.
Oh, disaster. And
no offense to Terry Taylor.
one thing we didn't touch on just back in the jump up factor, we talked about his matches and moments. I feel like we didn't really get into storylines and angles. Like, do you feel like he's got a ton there? Because the Bret matches are great, but they're not really feuds. Like, even SummerSlam 91 wasn't a feud. Like, they were just matched up. They don't even really interact much. You know, his most memorable stuff is as Ric Flair's manager. You can say the Flair feud was really good.
Red Hot.
I'd say, you know, between that and Beefcake, does he really have any, like, great feuds?
I think maybe Boss Man, too.
I was going to say Boss Man.
Yeah, okay,
well.
Boss Man's good, yeah. But even that was more Bobby than him, but fair.
True.
And even then, I mean, you know what else we could say is as disappointing as the match with Shawn Michaels in 93 was, the feud with Michaels was great. You know,
that's a good point. Their brawl in the car at
Raw, and just like the
cost them
counterpoint about being a best Intercontinental Champion ever. They shit the bed when they got in the ring, but when they were on their way there, they did a tremendous job. So all that said, let's figure out where we rank Mr. Perfect on our all-time list. And JT, I'm going to start with you on this one. Where do you see Mr. Perfect going after all this discussion we've had?
I'm going to say he's probably top 40 for me. Maybe the chance to get in the top 30, depending on how things shake out. I mean, he checks all the boxes of what you're looking for. Yeah, you know, I don't think I don't really count world title runs because it's such a. I mean, it's an indictment. It speaks a lot to the wrestler themselves, but for these guys that were major stars in their prime during the Hulk Hogan / Warrior era, they just weren't given the chance to be world champion.
Right.
Versus a guy that, you know, if Mr. Perfect was around in 2005, he'd be like a 19-time champion like Edge or whatever. So, I mean, it's not his fault that he came up in a time where they just had the most dominant wrestler of all time on top.
Right.
But, you know, yeah, I'd say top 40, just based on all this stuff. Maybe he can sneak up a little bit higher as guys fall around him.
Craig, how about you?
Top 30 for me. I also wanted to mention one thing on the jump-up bonus I forgot to mention earlier. Him destroying the belt. I don't remember what show it was on. Stardust Main Event, maybe.
Yes.
That is one of the most indelible memories from my childhood. My mind was blown. And to me, I thought Perfect when I was six. I mean, I didn't know anything about what future plans were. I thought Perfect and Hogan were going to headline WrestleMania 6. I just assumed that in my mind. I was like, oh, Hulk's going to get you now because you're destroying the belt. That's sacred. And so that was a really big moment for him. But I think Perfect's top 30 type guy for me. Just one of my all-time favorites. And I think he does check off most of the categories that you're looking for.
Yeah, I think Perfect's got a great resume in terms of the intangibles that we look for, work rate, promos, character. he nails it all. Justin definitely opened my eyes a little bit as far as the lack of truly great matches, and that will be a little bit of a knock on him. But yeah, I'm in the same boat as you guys. He's definitely top 40, top 30 for me. It's interesting. We didn't talk a lot about the Hogan feud. That was another one that I think he gets some points for. I think he had some good matches with Hogan.
That was my favorite, actually, of that Hogan era of like post Savage feuds. Like, I liked that better than the Earthquake feud, and I liked that better than the Warrior feud. And I don't know why that is. I think I just enjoyed Perfect and the Genius pinballing off of Hulk all the time. But I also enjoyed the destruction of the title and the promos and the fact that it was a different style of opponent for Hulk than, you know, the typical big giant guy that he has to overcome. So it was a good feud.
And the match I'd recommend to check out if you haven't seen is the Saturday's main event, the match with Tito. A great match, and I only call it out because 1990 WWF does not have a lot of great matches at all. You know, Hogan Warrior, I guess, is probably the match of the year, and there's nothing that's like, I mean, nothing I don't think breaks probably like 4 stars, depending on where you sit on the Hogan Warrior. Most of the best matches check in that 3.5 to 4 range. And I think Tito Perfect is right there. I think that's an awesome, for a show that has really good matches, but not as many during that time, that match just stands out as really fucking good.
Well, there you go, guys. I think we've run the gamut and talked all about Mr. Perfect Kurt Hennig, done him a good solid. Now, if you guys want to check in with your own opinions, please hit us up on social media. Go to the Facebook page. It's facebook.com/placetobenation, Justin.
Sure is.
All right, that's how you get there. And if you guys want to participate in the 100 Greatest Wrestler WWE Project, you can do it. You can submit your list. You can talk about it with us and be part of the fun. This is a great time. Thanks for doing this, boys.
All right.
Thank you. Absolutely.
Until next time, be back.